Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Over a decade ago, attorney Michael Bailey turned his attention to estate law after he recognized the unacceptable number of adults without proper end-of-life planning. Michael recognizes that many of his clients have difficulty finding the time for making a proper estate plan. That's why he became the Mobile Estate Planner. He will go to wherever you are to assist you with your estate planning, including writing wills, trusts, and giving you the information you need to avoid probate. Now, ATX, Ask the Experts, presents Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Papa was a rolling stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home. And when he died, all he left us was alone.
All right, good afternoon. Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source, so we can do something besides just leave you alone. And yes, I have the hiccups, folks, so every once in a while, I don't know what'll happen, but if I pause for a moment and you hear a hiccuping sound, that's me. It's not your car hiccuping or anything like that. It's just me, where I don't know if I was trying to eat something or drink something too quick or what happened, but, you know, so what can you do? There we go. Okay. So last time we were talking about what happens if you don't plan for things, and basically talking about the default rules. So if you'd like to talk to us on air, the phone number to talk to us on air is 303-477-5600, and my direct line is 720-394-6887. So let's hear. Last time we talked, I think we talked about the intestate rules, which is what happens if you die without a will. And some of those rules and how they can get really complicated, and how they can even lead to outcomes that are not desirable. So I've had clients who I sit down and I talk to, and they will tell me about their lives and about their kids' lives. And some of these kids either have turned to drugs and alcohol for whatever reason in their lives and are now addicted to drugs and or alcohol. And if you're addicted to drugs or alcohol, it's parents sometimes are not all that keen on simply turning the money over to their kids if they die. I had one client who I was talking to them, and we were setting up a trust and going through things. And I said, so are we going to leave things to your kids? And she's like, no, not really. I'm like, okay. Do we not like our kids, or what's going on here? She said, well, my one son is a heroin addict. And if I die and I leave him about $300,000, which would be his 50% of her estate, she says, I think if I leave him $300,000, he will come join me on the other side very quickly. Because he'll take that money. It'll be too large of a temptation. And he'll go out and buy enough heroin that he will go ahead and move on and join us on the other side. I said, well, that's probably not what we want to have happen, because, you know, we don't want to have an estate get left to somebody that will create a bad outcome there. We would rather have your kids be taken care of. And so in their case, what we ended up doing was we, as part of the trust, we created a supplemental need or a special needs trust so that the $300,000 could be kept in trust. And then that money would be used to help pay for the heroin addicted son's life, but in small doses. So like his brother was going to be in control of the money so that he could pay the rent or buy food for the brother, but not give the brother a large temptation of, oh, hey, here's $300,000. Good luck. Have fun. Don't use it on heroin. That's not going to go well. Well, you know, in an addict's brain, there's not that thought process of, oh, hey, I shouldn't use it on the addicted brain is just like, yep, heroin, need it. And if you have the means to get to it. So in that case, and, you know, my brother's an addiction recovery therapist. So he's talked to me about addict's brains. It's not that I'm, you know, super familiar with them, but we've talked about it. And so in that case, you know, the planning was important to make sure that the children were taken care of even when the parents were gone. And mind you, these were adult children. You know, the son was like 43 years old. So sometimes you plan when you have minor children. Sometimes you have to plan when you have adult children. Sometimes you have to plan when you have parents who are now beginning to have the mental capacity of children. But, you know, in that case, had the person not planned and the default rules had come into play and said, okay, well, we're going to give half to the brother, you know, despite how that may not have been a good idea, legally that's what was supposed to happen. So, you know, that even though, I mean, we'd like to think that, you know, what might be the best thing or might be a good thing, we'd like to think that the law will always play that out. It doesn't always work that way because of the rules and how things should be not always matching up with how they are. And so you want to make sure that your wishes match up with how things are going to go, not be caught on the default rules. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ The Source. Also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. Our phone number to hear to us or to talk to us on the air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. So, and you know that the 720-394-6887, you can call that number at any time to talk about your own personal situation, you know, if you don't want to talk about your personal situation on the air, all that kind of stuff. So sometimes you get adults who, adults and, they will, so my grandmother developed Alzheimer's for the last, for the last like 10 years of her life. So my grandma had Alzheimer's the last 10 years of her life. Well, the Alzheimer's robbed her of the ability to make an intelligent decision on her own because she didn't understand what she was deciding. She didn't understand what she was being asked. She didn't understand who she was, and she didn't understand where she was. You know, we'd move when my grandfather had died. She had moved out of her house because of her health concerns and into an assisted living type of facility. Well, and the thing that we get, as her Alzheimer's progressed and as she had memory loss and loss of ability to make her own decisions, we didn't have, there was the type of thing where it wasn't going to work out for her to be able to make important decisions because she didn't have an understanding of what was going on, and she didn't have an understanding of what the ramifications of a decision were. So it was not a good idea for her to make her own decisions. You know, we had medical documentation that she shouldn't be making her own decisions. And so at that point, I wasn't necessarily involved because I was a high school kid and didn't understand things like this. But my dad and his siblings, they had planned ahead, so they had powers of attorney in place. And the powers of attorney allowed them to make financial decisions for my grandmother and allowed them to make medical decisions for my grandmother. Now, had they not planned ahead, there is a methodology called guardianship or conservatorship. And in a guardianship or a conservatorship, you go to the court and you ask the court to take away a person's ability to make their own decisions. And the reason you do this is because they already don't have the ability to make their own decisions, at least not good rational ones. And the process involves there's lots of medical evidence that needs to be presented of, you know, doctors have cognitive ability and cognitive function tests of what a person may or may not be able to understand and recall and do. So you get a doctor's evaluation of a person. so that we can have, you know, a medical opinion of whether or not it's a good idea for this person to make their own decisions. Now, sometimes I get people who are like, oh, well, you know, my father, mother, husband, wife, children, et cetera, they're just making really terrible decisions. I need to be able to take over for them and take over. And I look at people and I'm like, okay, that is an interesting point of view. I understand that you're saying you don't really want people to be able to make their own decisions. And just because you disagree with their decisions does not make those decisions irrational or unsupportable. Because, you know, there are lots of people who make very different decisions than I do, or very different decisions than what I would. And those decisions may not be what you would choose, but those decisions can be decisions that are still rational and still based on a person's ability to make their own decisions. It's when a person doesn't have the mental capacity to make decisions that we're concerned about. Because if you don't have the mental capacity to make decisions, or you don't have the mental capacity to understand what you're doing, that's a bad place to make decisions. Now, sometimes, you know, Alzheimer's or dementia is one of those times that you can have a person making incorrect decisions. There's other cases as well. You know, if you've got somebody who is, you know, schizophrenic, or has multiple personality disorder, or somebody who has, I mean, for a time, I was mentally incapable of making my own decisions too. It was when I was severely injured and had a severe concussion that ended up putting me in a coma for 3 days or 4 days. So, you know, not the best idea for me to be making really important decisions like, oh, well, he hit his head and fractured his skull, and now he's unconscious. Yeah, let's ask him some really important questions. So, Mike, who do you feel that you should marry? No, probably not a good idea. You know, I wasn't even dating anybody at that time. Well, you know, how many kids do you want? Well, like, I'm going to make that decision at that point. Well, should you invest all of your money in stocks, bonds, or gold futures? Also not a good idea to make that type of decision when I was not mentally aware of where I was, what had happened, or what was going on. So, you know, if you don't plan ahead, there's not a person who in default is going to be able to make those type of decisions for you. It's not provided for under Colorado law. You actually have to go and ask the court to assign some, you know, for permission to make decisions for somebody else. Because, and this is very odd, I know this will come as a shock, courts aren't really interested in taking away a person's ability to make their own decisions. You know, it's strange. It's like, wait a minute, we should be able to make our own decisions? We should have our own self-determination? Nah. Well, just forget that. It's not worth the effort. We'll make our decisions for you. Now, it's amazing how often in life people are perfectly willing and happy to let people make decisions for you. But as a general rule, at least here in the United States and in Colorado, we like people to be able to be self-determinative and to make their own decisions about what is going to happen in their life and about what decisions they want to be able to make. It's just one of those deals. So we've got and if there's not a default rule of who can make a decision in your absence, other than, oh, we have to go to court and we have to ask. And, you know, going to court does involve time, does involve, if you hire an attorney, money. If you don't hire an attorney, it involves a lot of time and effort and possibly money getting up to speed on what needs to be presented as far as evidence goes. All of those things, you know, you're then stuck with the default rule of, hey, you know, you get to go figure this out with the court. And that's one of those things that can be very frustrating for people. You are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source. And my phone number to talk to me on air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. Now, the last client that I talked to today, where I met with them right before I came here, they were telling me about how they've had a fair amount of friends and relatives who have died recently. Well, they're both in their 80s/90s, so it makes sense that some of their friends are dying. So we've got, and they were telling me that as they, that they've never had any problems with going through and getting people's assets transferred from point A to point B. And one of them was saying, well, you know, we've got to have, we didn't really have to worry about having a will. We didn't really have to worry about having a living will. And one of the spouses was telling me this, and the other spouse is like, yeah, we had a will. Yeah, we had a living will. We sent those on. So it wasn't that, it wasn't so much that they actually hadn't taken, it wasn't so much that they had not had those things, just they weren't aware of it because things had gone smoothly. Well, then I have my other clients who they will tell me all of the, you know, their horror stories about things that have gone wrong, even though they did have a will or a trust. And usually I'm looking at wills and a trust, I'm like, well, this is 15, 20 years old. And it's very possible that mom and dad changed their mind over the course of time and just never changed the will. So it was kind of a problem there that people didn't, that like the when things work smoothly, people don't even seem to like realize that there's a problem, or that, you know, the reason it's going smoothly is because we had all of the things in place. You know, clients were like, oh, well, you know, everything just kind of transferred smoothly, and, you know, we got our money and it was great. And I'm like, okay, so were you the personal representative? No, I think one of my siblings did that. Okay, ask them if they could have done all that they did without a will, or ask a successor trustee if they could have done something without a will. And, you know, it's going to be a different game. And, you know, just the less that you have, these people were, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, our estate's pretty simple. We've got beneficiary designations on the IRA. We've got, you know, our son is on our bank accounts. And I said, and what about your house? Oh, well, you know, that'll be fine. We'll just transfer it to the kids. I'm like, really? How are you going to do that? So we had a discussion about what their options were and how real estate was going to go through the probate process. Well, we don't want to go through the probate process, they said. Okay. So here are our options to avoid the probate process. We can set up a trust that would allow things to transfer. We can use a beneficiary's deed, and a beneficiary's deed is essentially a transfer on death deed. Or we could transfer the house to your kids now and hope that they're really nice and don't want to sell the house and don't want to kick you out of it or things like that. And, you know, we had a good laugh about how their kids wouldn't kick them out of the house. And I said, well, you've got good kids, because not all kids are like that. Some parents have to worry about their kids, and some parents have to worry about whether or not they're going to be able to stay in the house. If, you know, if their kids have control of the house, they're like, nah, let's kick mom and dad out. We can give them a little tiny apartment, and then we can save their money, and then we'll get more money when they die. Well, that doesn't seem like a very nice thing, but I've seen it happen. And so we want to avoid that type of situation. And so we talked about what their options were. And, you know, I guess another way to avoid probate is just to not have anything left when you die, is to spend all of your money and all of your assets so that when you die, you don't have anything. You know, that is a viable strategy. The problem is that if you spend your money, you may be spending it on stuff. You may be spending it on things. I mean, I imagine the main way that I've seen stuff like this happen is that when you have people who are trying to spend money, they end up spending money on things that they don't necessarily want to. We've got people who are a lot of elderly people who end up in assisted living or kind of nursing home type of situations. They end up spending their money on the nursing home. If they're spending their money on nursing home, they're not necessarily receiving a whole bunch of stuff in return. I mean, they're receiving the services in return, but not necessarily tangible assets. And so we get our tangible assets who aren't. So if there's no tangible assets in return, then you're spending money on a nursing home, which, you know, is a good thing. If mom or dad need the nursing home care, mom or dad need the assisted living care, it's a good thing to have your parents in a safe place, because you want to have your parents somewhere safe so that they're not going to be injured, or they're not going to, I mean, you know, the typical, or the stereotypical, you know, you have an elderly parent who falls and lays there for, you know, 6 hours or a couple of days until a child comes by and finds an injured parent who has fallen. Well, if that's the case where parents have, you know, are in a medical situation or are a fall risk or some sort of risk, you don't want to have that parent who is stuck at home hoping that nothing bad happens. Or, you know, the worst situation where you've got somebody who, you know, passes away, and then, you know, it's a week or two before people notice that, you know, there's a pile up of newspapers on the front porch, or, and you go into the house and it smells like somebody who's been dead for a couple of weeks. And, you know, nobody wants that to happen. So is it worthwhile to spend the money taking care of mom and dad? I tend to think so. And, you know, we've done other shows where we've talked about what the options are to pay for that, so that it may not be just, oh, hey, we're going to spend every dime that you have. But, you know, even in my family, where, you know, my grandmother that had Alzheimer's, when my grandpa died, they sold their house in Palo Alto, California for in the neighborhood of $500,000, which, you know, the lot and the new house on it now is worth about $3.4 million. I'm like, come on, grandpa and grandma, you could have held on. You know, my other grandpa and grandma, who do not live in Palo Alto, California, are still alive. And they did not win the California real estate lottery the way that most people who built a house in California in the 50s did, because they lived in Minnesota, which, you know, is not quite the hotbed of tech and building tech companies like Palo Alto, California is. You know, Palo Alto, home to Hewlett Packard and Facebook and, you know, all these other, you know, high-tech companies that are highly valued. So, you know, but even with the $500,000, my grandma lived for another decade in assisted living. And by the time she passed away, all of the money had been spent, because it's expensive to live in assisted living for 10 years. And, you know, it's not like we were trying to say, oh, well, if grandma had just died quicker, then we would have gotten more money. You know, that's not what I'm getting at here. I'm just saying that if we can preserve your assets and pass them on to your family, most people would rather do that than pay Medicaid, the government, or pay the nursing home. Nothing against nursing homes, nothing against people who run nursing homes. You know, they're doing a very valuable service. But it's amazing how expensive that can get and how quickly that can eat through money. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source. Also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, and on 560thesource.com or the TuneIn app. My phone number to talk to me on the air is 303-477-5600, although in all fairness, that's actually the station's phone number. It's mine for the next, 4 minutes until my show is over, and then it becomes somebody else's number, but it belongs to the station. My direct line, however, is 720-394-6887, and I don't share that with the station. You know, the station's nice enough to share their phone number with me. I don't share my phone number with them. I'm just a punk like that. I'm like, no, it is my phone. You can't have it. You have like 30 phones here. So still. So, you know, default rules, and, you know, I mean, even as far as paying for for care, for long-term care. The default rules are such that, you know, my grandmother was working under default rules. So the default rules were such that, you know, she didn't do any planning. So she ended up spending $500,000 on her care, which is fine. So now we've got, you know, if she had done some planning, could we have helped her Money, could we have helped her money last longer? Sure. You know, I think the last couple of years she was living off of Medicaid, but she had spent all of her $500,000 down to, I mean, the Colorado level is $2,000. I don't remember what the California level is since she was in California, but that's where things were at. And that's how it, we've got things that work. And so, you know, my grandma relied upon the default rules. You know, now, is there a possibility that had I been 20 years older, I could have helped her plan ahead so that maybe we could have saved some of that money? Sure. What if we had not been able to, is there a possibility that even with planning, she would have needed a high enough level of care that we should have spent all of her money? Yes, that's a possibility too. But because she was in the default rules and because she didn't have any sort of planning, there wasn't a whole lot that was going on. So we've got, you rely upon the default rules. It tends to be more expensive. It tends to take more time. It may not lead to the outcome you want. And the default rules, despite what we think should happen, don't necessarily reflect that, because what I think what I may think should happen is different from what you may think should happen. It's different than what other people think should happen. I was talking to a client yesterday and I said, well, what if your kids die before you? They're like, oh, they'll go to their spouse. What if the spouse is also dead? Do you want to go to the grandkids or split up amongst the other kids? And she kind of looked at me like, I'd never even thought about that. I said, well, it is possible that both your child and their spouse would predecease you. So if you want to give it to the other kids, we can do that. If you want to give the grandkids, we can do that. But we got to figure out which one it is for it to do what you want. So we had that conversation. It's important to have the conversation. It's important to talk about it so that you're not stuck with the default rules, or maybe you like the default rules. If you like the default rules, great. Just make sure you know all of them. So thank you for listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ The Source. I will be back next week, and John Rush is up next with Rush to Reason. Talk to you later. Thanks, and have a great day. Bye.
Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey will return to ATX next Wednesday at 2:30 here on KLZ 560 The Source, AM 560, FM 100.7, and online at 560thesource.com.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.